All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am giving you my less than rapid reaction on the Falcons roster moves. We'll talk a little bit about the moves they made, trading for Jordan Richards, as well as the practice squad.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for a long time at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the illustrious host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. You know, let's go through the roster moves that occurred over the weekend. There's still some moves to be made. The Falcons still have a 53rd spot up in the air. As I'm recording this on Sunday evening, they also have a last spot on their practice squad up in the air. We'll talk about maybe who or what they plan to do with both of those two spots on today's episode. I'm not going to spend a ton of time breaking down every roster move. As I've said before, if you've been paying attention, been listening to this podcast, really for going back 3 months since June, we've been talking about roster stuff throughout the last couple of weeks as well as things geared up. Let's talk about some of the big moves that, you know, I think there's basically four moves. Four decisions that, you know, are worthy of discussion, a little bit more deeper insight. The Falcons chose to keep 9 offensive linemen, which, in, you know, that meant Sean Harlow being cut. They also kept Justin Zimmer as the 5th defensive tackle, making him the 9th defensive lineman. They kept Richard Jarvis as the 6th linebacker. And, of course, they traded for Jordan Richards to be their 4th safety while cutting Ron Parker. Everything else seemed to be pretty much business as usual. So let's first talk about the decision to cut Sean Harlow. As you guys well know, I was a pro Sean Harlow on this podcast. I think he performed reasonably well this preseason. I wouldn't stand for a guy if I didn't think he was playing at a, you know, sufficient level. You know, why he was buried on the Falcons depth chart, I cannot say. I can certainly speculate. But in terms of his on-field performances, I thought he was, you know, one of the better offensive linemen that the Falcons had during the preseason. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see him get cut. It was, you know, the possibility was out there, as I've mentioned a number of times, but I did not expect to see it happen. And particularly coming on the heels of that Thursday night preseason finale against Miami, basically when he was the first of the offensive linemen to get pulled from the game, that at least to me seemed like a decent indicator that, you know, he had basically made the team as a 9th or 10th offensive lineman. And I'll still sit here and say that given the fact that the Falcons only kept 52 guys on their roster, and, you know, I was sort of expecting them to keep 10 offensive linemen, they only kept 9, I still would argue that Harlow would have been that 10th guy, that last guy on the roster. But in terms of losing out on a 4th round pick, you know, a year after drafting him, I think is, you know, is disappointing. Because, you know, it's somewhat a further indictment of the Falcons' inability to develop young offensive linemen, which goes back several years. When you look back, you know, over the last 5 years, and this goes back beyond 5 years, but over the last 5 years, they've basically only developed Jake Matthews, Ryan Schrader, and Wes Schweitzer to a lesser extent. And we still don't really know what Wes Schweitzer is going to be. Hopefully he'll be a starter at one of these guard spots in the future, but we'll have to see about that. But by and large, outside of those three guys, they've had to rely on veteran players from elsewhere to sort of solidify the other roster spots on their offensive line. And now, you know, hopefully maybe Matt Gano is going to be the 4th young offensive lineman that they've sort of developed in-house. But as we saw in that preseason finale, he's still very raw, and we'll have to see, you know, what he does in the future. I don't expect him to get a ton of reps this season, so we'll have to basically wait and see. You know, based off of how he performed against Miami, I hope we don't see any of Matt Gano in 2019, but we'll have to see. You know, again, I think that sort of shows that Harlow wasn't cut because he wasn't as good as other players that the Falcons kept, like guys like Gano and Sam Brailo, but we'll have to see about them. You know, I think going back and looking at that 2017 draft, you know, I don't think, you know, Harlow wasn't my favorite pick of that draft. He was probably my least favorite pick of that draft. He felt like a little bit of a reach because the Falcons needed a body at that position, and they may have drafted him a round or two early than they needed to. And I think that's part of the reason, because I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of that pick, part of the reason why I was so critical of him after that first poor preseason performance against Miami last summer. But then he sort of grew on me watching him in the subsequent games, and I think he improved this past preseason, which is one of the reasons why, you know, I continue to, you know, say he was worth keeping. It's all disappointing in the large sense, because this is another young offensive lineman that the Falcons have essentially punted on, as they've done a number of times in the draft. And, you know, they've drafted guys like Jake Rogers, they drafted Schweitzer, they drafted Harlow. But all of those draft picks felt like consolation prizes. But, you know, watching all three of those guys, I should say, my original assessment was with for all three of those guys is those guys are destined to be backups, not starters in this league. And again, I think Schweitzer has sort of played at least at a decent enough level since he's joined the team that assessment may need to be rethought of. And I was hoping Harlow would as well. And, you know, holding out the hope that with another year of development that maybe he could. Not necessarily suggesting that Harlow, I felt Harlow had strong starting potential, but I think in terms of looking at the Falcons, we've talked about this a number of times over the last 6 months, and looking at the Falcons having a pretty old interior of their offensive line with Lavitre, Mack, Fusco, and Garland presumably likely to be replaced over the next two off seasons following the season, you know, the fact that the idea, the possibility that Harlow could wind up replacing one of those guys, one of those four spots, just would make, you know, things a little bit easier for the Falcons as they continue to rebuild their offensive line. And even if that spot is the least of those spots, which is presumably Garland as the fourth best guy and more of a backup, to me that was worthwhile, worth keeping Harlow to see if he could potentially do that. But, you know, he's going to move on elsewhere. Maybe he gets brought back to the practice squad. Maybe he catches on with another team. But essentially, as I've said a number of times, the Falcons cutting Harlow, whether or not he sticks around in the practice squad or remains to be seen, but is pretty much them moving on from Sean Harlow. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. There's more to come talking about the Falcons' final roster decisions, but I want to let you guys know that if you want betting advice, you guys got to check out my bookie. You got to remember that who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to MyBookie. You can trust me, guys. They are the best bet that you can make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today. They have in-game live betting and the most rewarding player perks in the biz. And for you fantasy people out there, you can even bet the over and under on how many fantasy points you think a player is going to score in each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when you create your account and claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay, so before we start talking about, you know, Justin Zimmer and Richard Jarvis making the team, let's talk about that last open roster spot on the Falcons. I can only guess as what the Falcons are planning to do with that as I'm sitting here recording on Sunday evening. Per D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he says that the Falcons are keeping that roster spot open for a vested veteran. For those of you that don't know, if you are on a NFL 53-man roster for the first game of the season, your entire base salary becomes guaranteed for the rest of the year. So often you'll see teams basically cut a guy that, you know, a little bit of a pricey veteran who has a high salary, and then bring him back the second week of the season so that they don't have to guarantee his entire base salary. And so he comes back at a reduced price and whatnot, so it saves money for the teams. You know, from the reports, it sounds like the Bengals are trying to do this with Michael Johnson, the defensive end that they cut over the weekend, who coincidentally was mentioned in the report by D-Led as one of two potential targets that the Falcons could be looking at that spot. The other guy is former Packers fullback Aaron Ripkowski that was mentioned by D-Led. You know, speaking of Ripkowski, he's okay. He's fine. He's certainly a capable fullback. Personally, if the Falcons were going to sign a fullback to basically brush Ricky Ortiz aside, I would personally prefer Jay Prosh, who got cut by the Texans this weekend. You know, he was a guy that I wanted the Falcons to trade for last year when we were going through our whole Derek Coleman thing. And so, you know, I would love to see that happen this year in 2018. As for Michael Johnson, you know, basically he's a run defender. I think he's a lateral move at best in terms of putting him in the Derek Shelby role. I think there was a time when Johnson was a better player than Shelby. I don't know if that's the case today. And I think, you know, a lot of people were sort of suggesting him and other players as basically signing an edge rusher just for the sake of signing an edge rusher. If it were me, the only guy out there that really sort of stands out in my eyes other than Cap Cappy is Steven Means, who was cut by the Eagles. I feel like if you're going to bring in an edge rusher, bring in somebody that legitimately brings something different to the table than what the Falcons already have at that position group with Brooks Reed and Tack and Vic. I think Means, based off of what I've seen from him, is arguably a more developed pass rusher than Vic Beasley. Not saying he's a better player, but just has, you know, a more refined skill set than Vic Beasley does, which, you know, I think is worthwhile. And when he's gotten opportunities in Philadelphia, which haven't been many, largely due to how deep their D-line rotation is, but he's been productive in limited opportunities. So I think he's worthwhile bringing, but other than that, just none of the other edges excite me. Not Michael Johnson, not Brian Robeson, not some of these, you know, insert third round pick that was drafted 2 years ago that you were high on, you know, in the draft, like a Kakaha or Deshaun Hall or whoever else is out there that other people have sort of mentioned. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of the whole, like, I like this guy in the draft 3 years ago, let's sign him and try to salvage him. I think that's a waste of time, because that's not how teams operate during the season. Teams operate during the season, can you help me win this upcoming game on Sunday? And, you know, taking a flyer on a developmental guy, you know, at a position where you could, you know, I know certain players on the Falcons roster are that, basically that type of player, Matt Gano being one of them. But, like, you know, you've had Gano in your building for 3+ months. So it's not as if, you know, you're bringing in some brand new guy in your building hoping that he can turn into a sort of that developmental option. So I think it's, you're better suited using those roster spots on players that actually can contribute. Let's talk about Justin Zimmer. Let's talk about Richard Jarvis. You know, we've talked about Zimmer. He showcased good pass rushing ability. He beat out Garrison Smith, who wound up getting claimed off waivers by the Cardinals. He beat out John Cunningham. We'll see if Cunningham comes back as a practice squad spot or lands elsewhere in the league. We'll see what Zimmer does. I'm not expecting him to get a ton of reps during the season unless there are injuries, as that 50 tackle will probably be inactive most weeks. But he shows pass rush ability, and certainly the Falcons, given the question marks surrounding Jack Crawford and how good he's going to be, and you know, sort of Deidre Sanaat's upside as a pass rusher, you know, having a talented young pass rusher like a Justin Zimmer, you know, makes a lot of sense from the Falcons' viewpoint. Jarvis seemingly made the team over other options at that sixth linebacker spot because of his ability to play strong side linebacker. Because you look at the Falcons roster as it's currently constructed, Kamal Ishmael is really the only option there, and he's not really a strong side linebacker. He played there last season when the Falcons were sort of, you know, looking to replace Duke Riley when he was out of the lineup. But Ishmael primarily is a middle and weak side linebacker, so having another body there in the event of a Devondre Campbell injury makes a lot of sense. Jarvis showed some pass rushing ability. There's some upside worth developing. He showed some nice ability on special teams. He's probably one of the more expendable guys on the roster in terms of, you know, his ability to contribute. But if he can showcase some special teams ability, if and when he gets opportunities to play, then that's worthwhile. We'll see what happens with Jonathan Celestin. Even though we've talked quite a bit that Celestin was by far the best of the other linebackers once you get past the top five guys, the fact that the Falcons have an overabundance of weak side guys, I think, sort of hurt his chances. So we'll see if maybe he lands that last practice squad spot. I want to come back and talk about Jordan Richards and what he's bringing to the table after his trade. But let me plug, since college football started up this past weekend, that the fact that the Locked On Podcast Network has many college shows. They've launched shows for Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida State, Oklahoma, Baylor, Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon, with many more to come as this 2018 college football season rolls on. You can find them wherever you get your podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about Jordan Richards. It is an interesting trade. It was unexpected. They cut Ron Parker to make that deal possible. And as I talked about on Friday's rapid reaction to the preseason finale episode, basically I said I would be shocked if they cut Ron Parker because they can't find a better option than him at that spot. And I still think that's true. I think what Richards brings to the table is not that he's a better safety than Parker. He's a different safety than Parker. And clearly the Falcons wanted to go in a different direction. If you hear anybody that's arguing that differently, that's saying Richards is an upgrade over Parker, like, just remember that Parker has been a starter in the league for the last 4 years and a pretty productive starter in the league for the last 4 years, while Richards was buried on the Patriots depth chart as the fourth safety. To me, that's basically the equivalent of someone being like, oh yeah, Sherrod Neesman, better than Ricardo Allen. It's like, no, he's not. The thing what Parker brought to the table is that he was a good coverage safety. We saw in that preseason finale some question marks in terms of run support, even though he only missed one tackle in that game. That was not necessarily maybe what the Falcons were looking. What Parker brought to the table is that he's a really good coverage safety, given his passes corner, given his versatility to cover a multitude of players. But I think due to the emergence of DeMonte Casey this summer, that the value of Parker being that coverage guy is less needed because of Casey's emergence as being that safety guy, that guy that can play in the slot, that guy that can play single high. And Parker, because, when we signed him, we thought, oh, he was going to be the backup to Keanu Neal, even though he's not necessarily a natural strong safety in terms of a box safety. But because, again, that coverage ability is really what you're looking for. You want that guy that can lock up that tight end one man to man more so than necessarily a thumper like a Keanu Neal. And, given the emergence of Casey, I think the Falcons were like, well, we got the cover guy. Maybe we do want more of that thumper type of guy that can sort of be that guy behind Keanu Neal. And I think that's more what Richards is bringing to the table. I wouldn't call him an enforcer in the same vein as Keanu Neal, but he's capable in run support. He's comfortable playing in the box. The real issue with Richards is that he is not a great coverage guy. So you're suffering a major downgrade in terms of coverage from going from Parker to Jordan Richards. He's not really good in man coverage. And I think he's decent in zone coverage. And I do think in the event of a Keanu Neal injury and Richards is plugged into the lineup, you're going to have to see the Falcons make adjustments to what they want to do coverage wise, because they're not going to be able to trust Richards to the same level in terms of man coverage. And if he's in the lineup, you'll probably have to see them play a lot more zone, which, we'll see if that works out in their favor. We know that there's several players on the Falcons defense that aren't necessarily adept in zone coverage and are much better in man coverage. But again, that's a bridge we'll have to cross when we get to it. Really, the thing that Richards brings to the table more than anything else, and the real reason I think the Falcons traded for him and replaced Parker with him, is his special teams ability. And I think that, again, goes back to what Casey did with Casey's emergence and being the clear-cut guy that's going to be the third safety in the Falcons, hopefully expanded usage of three safeties this year. And that's something we've touched upon as a way of sort of getting the best 11 players on the field, a way of sort of maybe masking the fact that they don't have great linebacker play. Once you get past Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, you maybe can put Keanu Neal down in the box as that linebacker and bring Casey onto the field. I think that is something that makes a lot of sense. And so with Parker being relegated to that four safety spot, that four safety, by and large, due to Casey's emergence, the only time he's really going to get opportunities, unless there are injuries, are on special teams. So that's really where Richards is better at. I think Parker was fine on special teams. He's played special teams in the league, just hasn't done it a lot these last couple of years when in Kansas City, because he was a starter. Normally put starters on special teams. I think he was fine to do that role, but maybe he didn't want to do that role. Maybe he wanted to, you know, he asked for his release to find an opportunity to get more playing time on defense with another team, or maybe the Falcons just looked at him and were like, you know, we can do better. And if this guy's going to be a special teams guy, we can do better than what Ron Parker brings to the table there. And so that's where Richards come in. It'll be interesting to see if Richards winds up being the team's personal protector on the punt coverage unit. That is a role that he filled in the second half of last season when the Patriots had injury to their normal guy, Nate Ebner, and Richards filled in, from what I could tell, reasonably well in that role. And the Falcons don't really have a clear-cut guy there. They've been using Brian Poole there. They've been using Isaiah Oliver mainly there in the preseason. But that was an opening for this team going into the summer, and it was a question mark about, you know, that we've talked about on this podcast as something, and presumably you would think maybe Richard solves that problem if he continues in that role. So I think the Richards trade is a good deal for the Falcons because they get more value on special teams, and they didn't really have to give up much. They gave up a conditional 7th round pick in 2020, which is basically the lowest a team usually is willing to accept for a trade. That's basically the Patriots telling us that they were on the verge of cutting him, and they gave him to us for like the minimum compensation that you typically see in the NFL, which is a 7th round pick 2 years from now, as opposed to next year. So, you know, the Falcons were able to make that, you know, presuming upgrade in terms of special teams value for minimal costs. Richards is entering the final year of his contract, so we'll see if he performs well enough on special teams and potentially limited opportunities on defense. He could be brought back mainly to be a special teams guy, not necessarily a guy that you're, I think, wanting to see extended reps on defense. But we'll see. Maybe he's better in Atlanta than he was in New England. Who knows? We'll wrap things up talking about the practice squad. No true deep insights here. We've talked about several of these guys before on this podcast over the weeks. Nothing really pops. You know, really the practice squad is for guys that you want to keep guys around for another year and hope that they grow and compete for reserve roles next year. Typically, the Falcons haven't had a lot of success keeping guys in the practice squad. You know, 8 out of the 10 guys that they had on their initial practice squad last year are not with the team anymore. The two guys that are still with the team are back on the practice squad. That's Daniel Brunskill and Deontay Burton. So it's one of those things where, like, you don't have a high, you know, there is a high turnover rate when it comes to these practice squad guys. And like last year, I think with guys like Marvin Hall, who I personally had had a lot of belief that he had a potential in this league, I don't necessarily see Marvin Hall on this year's practice squad, at least among these initial guys, but they still have one spot open. You know, Devin Gray doesn't give me the same sort of feelings and opinions about his potential to be a developmental wide receiver as Marvin Hall did a year ago, but we'll have to see about that. We've talked about Kurt Banker, quarterback, a ton. We'll see what growth he shows, but, you know, I think people penciling him in as the heir apparent to replace Matt Schaub as the number two quarterback, we'll have to wait and see on that. I don't think Banker did a whole lot to really inspire confidence that he is definitely going to be that guy in the same way that we've seen in past years with guys like John Parker Wilson and Dominique Davis that didn't really work out either. But, you know, I think those guys were much better than Banker was this past preseason. So that doesn't necessarily bode well for his future. Jaden Graham, the tight end from Yale, to me is more of a body. I really wasn't impressed with anything he did this preseason. Daniel Brunskill was a guy that I liked last summer. Basically was the Matt Gano of last preseason. We saw him get extended work in the preseason finale at guard. Maybe the Falcons sort of are looking to maybe develop him in that capacity and maybe potentially be that sort of Sean Harlow replacement. You know, he's very raw, but he certainly has athleticism that you like. J.C. Hassenauer, the center, flashed some ability. I think he's a work in progress. Jacob Tuioti Mariner is okay as a defensive end. I think he mostly sticks because the Falcons don't have a backup five technique behind Derek Shelby. Ryan Neal was up and down. I think he flashed potential. I think the hope is that you can turn him into a poor man's Ron Parker and be that sort of coverage safety. With, you know, given his experience as a cornerback, he's more of that than necessarily an enforcer at the strong safety position. And, you know, the Falcons also brought in a long snapper in Jeff Overbaugh, which is kind of baffling. The only reason this sort of makes sense to me is if Josh Harris, who basically had to make every single tackle on special teams in that preseason finale on, you know, the Falcons punted a million times in that game. Maybe he got a little dinged up and the Falcons want to keep an extra long snapper around just in case he isn't ready to go for week one. You know, the first injury report should be released today as you guys are listening to this. So we'll find out if Harris is on it. But other than that, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to keep a second long snapper around. I know Josh Harris is entering a contract year, but, you know, if he's the highest paid long snapper in the league, he'll make $1.2 million per year, which is pretty much nothing in terms of cap space. So I feel like, you know, the Falcons being in a position where they're, like, looking towards the future in terms of replacing Josh Harris is kind of ridiculous, especially given that he's been pretty much perfect snapping the ball since his rookie season. So he's had like 90 plus consecutive games where he's been perfect snapping the ball, and keeping him is pretty much the cheapest contract you're going to ever come across on a multi-year deal in this league. So I think that notion is kind of ridiculous. So I'm assuming it has to do with sort of more an immediate need that Overball is potentially bringing, which is the possibility of injury. Maybe that's a reason why the Falcons are keeping that 53rd roster spot open, due to the possibility that if Harris is not going to play this week, then maybe Overball will be promoted and bumped to the 53rd roster spot. Who knows? That's mainly it. I know, Jeff Bischoff, you sent in a question on Twitter. I will answer that on tomorrow's episode. I just don't want this episode to run too long. The last thing I will say is to let you guys know that tomorrow I will give my initial thoughts on the Eagles matchup and answer Jeff's question. He asked about why the Falcons didn't trade for Khalil Mack. You know, I could spend some time going into the injury. He had a follow-up question about what would have happened, sort of a what-if scenario, if the Falcons had taken Mack in 2014. And I think, you know, that's a fun sort of what-if scenario that deserves more than like 2 minutes of, you know, simple explanation. So that's something we can touch upon tomorrow when we talk about the upcoming Eagles matchup. Wednesday's episode, we will have a crossover episode. That's the plan, with a host of Locked On Eagles, Lou DiBiase. And then Thursday, I guess we'll do another preview. Maybe if you guys have specific questions that you can send in specifically to that matchup, I'll answer them. Or, you know, if you have questions about other things, I can answer those as well. And then Friday will be our rapid reaction show. Next week, we should get back into our regularly scheduled week, and that'll hopefully continue through the rest of the season. However, this year is going to be a little different. The network has sort of suggested that, you know, Wednesday should be the crossover day. And last year, our schedule was Thursday, typically was that day. So each game, each week, will typically have Wednesday be our crossover day. And so typically Wednesday last year was our RL22 review, which we did a lot of Q&A stuff on in that day. So we'll have to change things up. Basically, you know, Monday, the rapid reaction show, Wednesday, the crossover episode, that's more of a preview episode, are pretty non-negotiable at this point, but it does leave opportunity to switch up what we do on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Last year, Tuesday was our recap, where we would bring on another Falcons blogger, or podcaster, or Twitter personality to be on the show and talk about the previous weekend's game. And then, of course, Thursday was our preview episode, and Friday typically was a fan talk, or, you know, reserved for a second preview episode if I can get another guest or whatever. It was just more of an open-ended thing. And so let me know what you guys want me to do this year for Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday shows. Right now, it seems like we'll still continue to do the recap on Tuesday, and maybe Thursday will be the Q&A / All-22 breakdown. And then Friday will continue to be the fan talk. If I have to choose, that's probably what I'll wind up doing. But this is an opportunity for you guys to provide your feedback. If you want to see differences on those Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday shows, maybe you want the All-22 Q&A thing to be on Tuesday, although the All-22 doesn't drop until Tuesday, and I usually record Tuesday's episode on Monday night. So that would have to take some, changes. But again, this is things that you guys can provide your feedback on, and sort of what your show, what you want this podcast to be, the regular schedule for each week to be. And you can, of course, let me know on Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, which this is, just go ahead, send it all over to Locked On Falcons. That's an easier way for me to find your podcast related questions and comments and inquiries and whatnot. Of course, you can also use Facebook, the other major social media platform, the Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page there, and you can send me messages on that. You can also send me messages on email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com. That's also your way to get in contact for future Fan Talk episodes, giving me your availability and your contact information, phone number, Skype account, whatever, either works. And then, you know, you can also leave a comment on falcfans.com where the show is posted daily. So, yeah, that's the plan right now, guys. So let me know what you guys want to see in the schedule be in 2018. And maybe some new features that I can bring to the table on a weekly basis or bi-weekly basis or whatever this season. So there you have it. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about this upcoming Eagles matchup, giving you my sort of general overview of things. And then we can sort of get into the nitty gritty on Wednesday and Thursday, sort of getting into the, sort of the specifics and whatnot. And we'll talk about Khalil Mack and that trade and how the Falcons would be so much better off, or maybe not, had they drafted him or traded for him or whatever. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.